Welcome one, welcome all. Thanks for joining us today. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio where you are the star, you are the talent, and you will drive the talking points of the day. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. I'm William Walter, Policy Research Director and Lead Training Organizer with Our Wisconsin Revolution, and we are ending our fun little vacation here as Papa Luke is going to be back on Monday, and we're very excited to have him back, but it means we have one more day to party. I got Aaron on the board today. Aaron, you looking forward to our Friday party day?
Yeah.
Friday fun day, maybe let's call it.
Friday party fun day, your favorite Wednesday of the week.
My absolute favorite Wednesday of the week.
Yeah, I feel like I have a pretty good Wisconsin headline for today later.
Uh-oh. Aaron did his homework. He's already two steps ahead of Luke. And joining us today as well, we have my good friend, the executive director of Our Wisconsin Revolution, Mr. Andre Walton. Andre, how are you this lovely Friday afternoon?
I'm doing great, Will. I'm glad the air quality is slightly better than last week, but I'm feeling good. Thanks for having me on.
It's very nice to be able to breathe, I can imagine, right, Andre? I made the joke last week a couple times. People would ask how you were doing, and I would quote that song where it's like, I'm still alive, but I'm barely breathing because of the Canadian wildfires. And I got a nice little chuckle or two out of that, you know?
Yeah, we take air for granted. So we got to really start appreciating our air quality a lot more. Mm-hmm.
Especially in Wisconsin. We have such beautiful landscape, lakes and wildlife. And you hit the nail on the head that you take air for granted. And today we have a very fun Party Friday lined up where we're going to kind of bounce all over the board. We have a number of stories that we want to touch on a little bit, and we have Wisconsin headlines coming up at the end of the show. Andre, I'm going to put you on the spot, and you will have to be the judge to determine whose Wisconsin headline is more Wisconsin between myself and Aaron. I cheated a little bit before the show and asked Aaron what his headline is, and it's really, really good. So I'm kind of nervous for this one. I don't get to beat up on Luke like I usually do, but we'll see. We'll see what comes of it, because I am pretty excited for my headline as well. And I want to lead off the show with a question for you, the audience. Are partial vetoes and line item vetoes inappropriate? Are they acceptable, or is this executive overreach? Of course, we are referring to the Wisconsin budget that was signed by Tony Evers a couple of days ago. And the headline generating piece was, of course, his very hilarious partial line item veto regarding school funding. And to give a little bit of context to the whole situation, reading from a piece at wiscontext.org, the story of Wisconsin's singular partial veto, how the state's governor received the power to make law. And the piece notes that Wisconsin's top state office has extraordinary latitude to reshape bills, specifically appropriations bills, through the use of partial vetoes. These vetoes are similar to the line item vetoes granted to governors of most other states, 44 other states to be exact, but Wisconsin's partial veto is uniquely powerful because, unlike in other states, governors in Wisconsin can strike nearly any part of a budget bill, including sentences, words, or in some cases, even a single character or digit. This ability has allowed Wisconsin governors since 1930 to wield a quasi-legislative power to substantially and frequently controversially alter the text and implications of appropriations bills with little, if any, legislative input. In this situation, we had, reading from the $99 billion budget that Tony Evers signed into law on Wednesday, it read originally for the limit for the 2023-24 school year and the 2024-25 school year, add $325 to the result under par. Governor Evers line vetoed the before 2023-24, as well as the 24 school year and the 20 hyphen school year in between 2024 and 2025, meaning the new piece of legislation reads for the limit for the 2023-24-25 school year. So there was a lot of words, and without the image in front of you, I can understand it would be a little difficult to understand, but basically he took the writing that had increased school funding for the next 2 years And instead, it will be increased for the next 400 years, which is frankly hilarious. It's a bit petty and kind of trolling. And I'm going to take the argument that I think it's gross overreach conceptually, in the sense that an individual governor should not have the ability to do this. However, conservative governors have been using this for years in Wisconsin. Democratic governors have been using this for years in Wisconsin. Quite famously, even recently, Scott Walker issued a partial veto in the 2017-2019 budget that was dubbed the, quote, thousand-year veto, because Walker used his partial veto authority to turn a legislative deadline of December 31st, 2018 into December of 2018. So he increased the legislative deadline by over 1,000 years. In comparison, Tony Evers increased school budget funding by 400 years, has been receiving significant flack from a lot of conservative operatives who, of course, did not have any criticism of Scott Walker's doing it. I think it's inappropriate either way. I think that Wisconsin governors are given way too much power in this regard. Andre, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think objectively speaking, it's just it's the fact that the governor's pen in Wisconsin is just overpowered. That's just, there's no other, you know, kind of governor in this country that has that much power with changing the budget and changing legislation. Well, like I said, I do think it objectively is overpowered. And obviously in this time, it's kind of the only balancing act that, you know, the Democratic Party has, given the gerrymandered of the state mm-hmm. legislators. So obviously it's like a balance of power, but objectively speaking, it's like, okay, when you can, you know, pass all budget increases for the next 400 years or do something for the next 1,000 years, you start to look back and like, wait, this doesn't really seem right. But I guess in the perfect world, you have a more balanced legislator and you have a Supreme Court that's more balanced and takes things objectively. So obviously, if things were working in a perfect world, the governor's pen would still, you know, wouldn't have as much power. But we don't live in a perfect world. We were a very unbalanced state in which there's way too much balance in one sector or another, which makes, you know, each branch of our government overpowered. So yes, objectively speaking, it is overpowered, but it is, I would say the headline that I would use, and I think you kind of hinted at this, was that Governor Evers is the most base troll in Wisconsin, just because he pretty much trolled the Republican legislator in increasing education funding for the next 400 years, which I'm sure they had no idea that he was going to kind of pull out of his back pocket.
Mm-hmm. This is Town Call. If you'd like to participate in today's forum or have any additional questions, comments, or concerns you'd like to throw our way regarding partial vetoes, are they appropriate? Are they overpowered? Or is this executive overreach? Give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. Andre, I kind of want to touch on, you noted the headline giving Evers the award of ultimate troll might be appropriate in this situation. I think something that we've seen through our years of organizing through our Wisconsin Revolution is very frequently the Democratic Party does not go far enough. They're afraid to take the challenge to the Republican Party because they still believe in being cordial. You know, the they go low, we go high type scenario. They don't actually want to implement true structural change because that would be it would impact the status quo too much, right? We don't want to be different. We just want to play by the rules and we want to be cordial and professional. And I don't think that mindset plays well with young people in particular. Young people are sometimes swimming in thousands of dollars of student loan debt, as we covered earlier in the week with both Colin and John. They want to see actual changes to their quality of life. They want to see politicians that are willing to step up and fight for them. They want to see people who have said, no, you know, I'm not going to be the bigger person when you're willing to throw away all decorum and do whatever you need to retain power. And I think the positive publicity that Tony Evers has received for this at the national level, of course, at the state level on Twitter, we're seeing a lot of conservative elected officials whining and crying and complaining about how this is overreach and all that, when, as I mentioned earlier, they didn't have a peep to say when Scott Walker did the same thing. Is this an example of the Democrats finally using their power to get something done, finally stepping up to the plate and saying, no, we were elected to be in this position. We're going to do what we want and you can deal with the results. Or is this just trolling? I mean, I'm really excited to see Tony Evers use his authority to get something done. And I wish the Democrats would be more aggressive in doing this because, as we are seeing with the positive response at the national level, this is popular. People like when you're willing to do this.
I mean, in my humble opinion, I think it's a little bit of both. Because on one side, you obviously could have completely vetoed the budget and say, hey, the Democrats have a mandate. We've won all the statewide elections over and over. So you can use that as leverage. But on the other hand, you obviously have the situation where there are some little gains in there where you have like increase in PFAS combatant funding. You have increases in shared revenue, which has hampered local municipalities for years and years since the Scott Walker era. So I'd say it's a little bit of both, but I would also say that, you know, how far can you go with, you know, a legislator that is gerrymandered and they write the budgets and they can really throw out anything that you suggest. So I think it's usually a little bit hard to kind of adjust of how far they can or cannot go with our current maps. But the question I always ask is, what is the Democratic Party going to do when and if we get fair maps in the state of Wisconsin? How far are they going to go? How far are they going to fight the Republicans back? Because it's one thing to say, hey, we have this excuse because there's a they have the majority, it's gerrymandered, et cetera, et cetera. But what are you going to actually do when there is a level playing field? Are you going to say and do the things that you said you were going to do when you didn't have that majority? And that's the question I continue to ask.
Will you fulfill those election
exactly.
promises, or are you just going to sit down
exactly.
and try to find someone else to deflect the blame to?
Exactly. And I think that's the big question. And I think Democrats have to be ready to answer that question and fulfill any promises that they make under, you know, a gerrymandered legislator. And I think that's going to start, you know, manifesting pretty soon, especially with Janet Protasiewicz as the new Supreme Court judge. And, you know, we'll see that even with, you know, the actions of Tony Evers, because obviously I think the Republican Party are going to be taking him to court quite often. And we're going to see how the Supreme Court reacts to them, you know, trying to thwart any power that he institutes. So I think we're going to start seeing some early fights and seeing how far the Republican or the Democratic Party is willing to fight. And then I think everything else is kind of a what if scenario of what if this and what if that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. This is Town Call. If you'd like to participate in today's forum or you have questions, comments, or concerns regarding the partial veto and line item vetoes in the state budget, give us a call, 844-967-2789. We'll see you right after the break. Now I'm trying to make sense of what little remains. Oh, cause you left me with no love to my name. I'm still alive, but I'm barely breathing. Welcome one, welcome all, welcome back. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. We are talking Wisconsin budget and not necessarily the legality, because it's been proven time and time again to be legal in this state, but the acceptability of partial vetoes and line item vetoes. Is it appropriate? Is this executive overreach? I'd like to hear your thoughts. First on the line, Ken from Fond du Lac. Ken, what are your thoughts on the recently signed Wisconsin budget?
Yeah, it's kind of, I'm just trying to still understand why the tax cuts. That would help 90% of Wisconsinites, especially with inflation the way it is, the food costs, fuel. The average citizen would save $1,000 to $1,500 a month. I'm just trying to understand why about the tax cut. I can understand the rich, you know, that's beyond the point here, but even the low class, the middle class, the low class, unless you make less than $35,000, and that's they pay very little into income tax of the state the way it is. What a $6 billion surplus, I don't understand. That's why, I guess I don't understand why a tax cut wouldn't have benefited pretty much 90% of the Wisconsinites.
Yeah, Ken. So first of all, because of the progressive tax brackets, technically everybody is getting a tax cut. If based on your earnings, you know, let's say you make $400,000, the first $30,000, which is in bracket one or two, is still taxed at that lower rate, which is 3.5%. The Evers veto on the income tax cuts for the state's two highest income brackets cuts down on, as you noted, the wealthiest tax cuts, though the budget also will no longer condense the four tax brackets to three. Joint filers in the highest bracket making $405,550 or more will no longer see the 15% reduction, while joint filers in the second highest bracket, which falls between $36,840 and $405,000, will also not see the 17% decrease. You're correct. You know, $36,000 to, I believe the median income in the state is about $65,000, $66,000, $67,000. That would be the majority of Wisconsinites. Obviously, that's the median means the middle. That's where most Wisconsinites' earnings is approximately. However, at least from my perspective, I think it's ridiculous that we have a tax bracket that includes that wide of a gap between earnings, right? Somebody who's making $36,000 a year and somebody who's making $400,000 a year are living completely different lives, right? They live in different neighborhoods. They have different residences. They're driving different vehicles. They're going on different vacations, because $36,000 and $400,000 is such a vastly different amount of income. What you're able to do with that spare with that amount of money, I think it's frankly kind of gross. There was a tweet from Senator Chris Larson, actually, who noted that from 1911 to 1932, Wisconsin had 13 different income brackets. And that, I think, allows it makes it much easier for legislators to specifically target who, where, and what these tax breaks are going to be given to. Because, you know, as you noted, most Wisconsinites would be getting a tax cut. However, because it's based on your total income, the tax cut for the majority of Wisconsinites would have been a couple hundred dollars. Not that a couple hundred dollars doesn't make a difference, but compared to the average decrease of $1.8 million that the highest 11 earners in the state would have received, I think the average gets brought up significantly for marketing purposes when you're able to point out how much the top percentages are bringing in, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but why didn't he veto the top percentage and just give it to the middle class? Couldn't he do something like that?
So he did veto the top tax bracket will no longer be receiving their tax cut, and the second highest bracket will not either. The issue is that second highest bracket is so wide. That's kind of what I'm pointing out here is the second bracket is $36,000 to $400,000. Now, I think we would both agree that somebody earning $400,000 is one of the highest earners in the state, correct?
Correct, but they also pay the highest income tax in the state, too.
They do. They pay the most. But they also would have received the largest percentage of a cut.
I don't know what this, why, yeah, there's people that make a little more money than other people. Why wouldn't you want to keep those people in the state that pay into the income into the state? Why would you punish? They do pay more than the poverty, late, the lower class, the middle. Yeah, they should pay more, and they are paying more. And what point do you think, should they pay 50% of their $400,000, or what kind of percentage would you? That's the whole thing. You know, I think it's 7% now. They pay in income to the state 7 or 8. What would be fair, that them to pay 10? I don't know.
I believe it was 7.65 for the highest earners, and that was going to get cut to 6.5, which was the largest percentage cut as well. I guess my question, Ken, would be, do you think these wealthy individuals are fleeing the state of Wisconsin because of this tax rate? Or do you think, you know, they'd be kind of upending their whole life? Potentially they own a business in Wisconsin. They're not just going to casually leave everything they've already built up because of an extra percentage or two in taxes. If they did, Wisconsin wouldn't have any wealthy residents anymore.
I think we also have to put this in context a little bit. So if you think about it, over the last 40 years, the rates for the top 1% have actually fallen by 30% since 1980. And actually in that same time span for the bottom 20%, those same rates have gone up 20% for the bottom rate percent. So tax rates have been falling for the wealthiest Wisconsinites for over 40 years. So it's not like they're, you know, having a bad deal with this tax situation. They've gotten the best tax incentives over the last 40 years. It's actually the lowest owners who've actually had their taxes increases percentage wise. So, I mean, I don't think it's like the rich are being punished here. And it's not like the rich are fleeing the state. In fact, there's no evidence that they are fleeing the state or that they're feeling punished. So I'm not exactly sure, you know, if it's a serious problem.
Remember too, Ken, that the top individual marginal income tax rate through was about 90% from 1944 through 1963. We have had times in American history where the ultra wealthy were taxed at incredibly high rates. And I think there's a lot of people who would refer to those as kind of the golden years of the American economy. Do we go back to that? You know, you mentioned earlier, where do we draw the line? That's the question that the people of Wisconsin and Wisconsin legislators need to be asking.
Yeah, the question also, you're not encouraging people. You're not encouraging. How many people you know that retire and move to states that don't have an income tax? There's not too many people. Yeah, there's a lot of people. I'm just saying, you know, that's why, I mean, you can't, there's got to be a happy medium. Yeah, I know, it's all about the rich. They do pay a high percentage of income tax to the state the way it is. I'm just saying how much, so we're all getting punished by Tony Evers, all the middle class is being punished because he vetoed the whole bill, which would have helped out practically 90%. And no, it would have been a lot more than a couple hundred bucks, as far as what I looked at Civitas. So
no, the data shows otherwise. The amount of tax decrease would have been average decrease for income earners between, you know, pick a number. I have the Department of Revenue's information right here. So let's say 50 to 60,000, because that would encompass the median income, would see an average decrease of $165.
What would 80?
So 70 to 80,000 adjusted gross income would receive an average decrease of $335. 80 to 90K would receive an average decrease of $424.
So
according to the Wisconsin Department of Revenue.
So that doesn't matter then. I mean,
the largest, the largest total count of adjusted filers is actually 30,000 to 40,000 at 283,000. And they would receive an average decrease of $32. Yeah.
All right. The other question is now with the funding for the schools, each child will receive $324. Is that true?
Yeah. So it's $325, and let me get. So to guarantee that schools have stable revenue moving forward, Evers tweaked the budget language so that the districts are now able to implement a $325 annual increase in spending per student. Yes. Originally, the legislature approved the increase for the next 2 years, but Evers' veto extends it through 24-25.
And that's the highest ever, correct?
I believe so.
And if the state doesn't come up with that funding, who pays for it?
Well, that's a great question, Ken. And I guess before we get to that, I'd like to know your thoughts on, just because it was the posed question of the day, do you think partial vetoes or line item vetoes are appropriate conceptually? You know, we noted that conservative governors have used it over the years. Democratic governors have used it over the years. Arguably, the most famous example was in the 91-92 state budget when Tommy Thompson approved an appropriation that would authorize the state to reimburse municipalities for tax credits on up to $35,000 of the value of the property. He struck almost the entire provision, including individual digits in years and monetary value, to arrive at a brand new appropriation of $319 million for a school tax credit. So this is not necessarily a bipartisan problem in the sense that only one side is doing it. I think both parties would argue against it when they're not in power. But of course, when they're in power, they want to take advantage of it. Surprise, surprise. What are your thoughts on partial line item vetoes?
No, I think it's ridiculous. Any rate, getting back to the child, it's $325 a year. Now, when the state doesn't fund that, where does that money come from? Property tax, correct?
Correct. So it, well, actually, it says, while it does not obligate districts to raise property tax and it still keeps school spending increases below the state or below the rate of inflation, yeah, if it's not funded. They don't even necessarily have to raise property taxes.
Oh, good point.
No, they don't.
Okay, I was mistaken.
Have to, but, yeah, no, they don't necessarily have to, but they have all the right in the world. So if you want to spend that much for each child, they'll raise property taxes to pay for it. What you're going to see is big sports complexes going up in high schools all around the state.
Is
you're
that new?
See spending like you've never seen on public schools before.
There's already a number of high schools around the state who have massive sport complexes.
Oh, you're going to see it now because it's an open checkbook.
To give you an example, I'm in Germantown. We just built a field house a couple years ago that would have been really nice to have while I was growing up. Unfortunately, I had just graduated, but I don't think these massive sporting complexes are anything new, particularly for some of the more successful programs in the state.
So, yeah, that's true. Very true. Well, people get you voted for. Have a good day, gentlemen.
Thanks so much for joining us, Ken. It was wonderful to have you. This is Town Call. We are talking the state budget and partial line item vetoes in particular. If you're interested in participating in today's forum, give us a call, 844-967-2789. Andre, we touched a little bit on Tommy Thompson's creative use of the line item veto. We touched on Scott Walker's creative use of the line item veto. I did want to note that this has been brought to the courts as well, particularly in 2020 when Tony Evers had, I believe, three items removed from his budget. Now, in this budget, he issued 51 partial vetoes after promising, quote, as many partial vetoes as we can muster. And this would not be the first time this is done. As we noted, we're going to cover after the break a couple more instances, but I'd like to hear your thoughts, people of Wisconsin, on partial line item vetoes. Are they appropriate? Are they inappropriate? Is this executive overreach? Should one individual have the power to gut numbers, hyphens, individual parts of a sentence to enact their will? Or is this inappropriate? Give us a call, 844-967-2789. We'll be right back after the break. Welcome one, welcome all, welcome back. This is Town Call. It is Friday, my absolute favorite Wednesday of the week. And this is a brand new approach to homegrown radio. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. We're talking Wisconsin budget partial line item vetoes in particular. And Andre, we noted before the break, Evers used a line item veto 51 times in the budget bill, which is not uncommon. In 1991, Governor Tommy Thompson set the record with 457. However, it has been previously amended to restrict some of the abilities governors are allowed to do. For example, I believe it's called the Frankenstein veto, where you're no longer allowed to veto single letters in a word in order to form a new word, because that's starting to get into Twitter meme territory. So I'm glad we took that opportunity. Evers' creative deployment of the authority has prompted pushback from Republicans in the past who have threatened a court challenge. For example, in 2020, three of the line item vetoes used in 2020 were struck down by the state Supreme Court for how broad they were. As you noted earlier in the show, Janet Protasiewicz will be seated on August 1st, and a new Supreme Court very well might have this budget on the docket in front of them. We're going to go to the phone lines. We got Jim from Appleton. Jim, what are your thoughts on partial vetoes and line item vetoes?
It's a wonderful tool against the gerrymandered legislature. I've been trying to remember some egregious bad vetoes, and other than Scott Walker, I can probably only remember one or two from years back when Tommy Thompson had the Frankenstein veto. In general, yeah, it probably shouldn't be out there, but when the legislature can gerrymander itself to this point, and a decade or so ago, the Democrats did the same thing.
Exactly,
what
Jim.
What else is a statewide elected office gonna use to get at him?
Remember, too, that in a lame duck session before Tony Evers was sat in the governor's mansion, Scott Walker did all he could to reduce the power of the office. In an effort to, you know, make Evers' influence less valuable. And I think you touched on it pretty well, Jim, that conceptually, yeah, it's inappropriate. A line item veto with this much power should not be allowed. However, the rules are written as they are. And I think you're doing a disservice to the individuals who elected you if you are not taking full advantage of the powers given to you, particularly because you know your opposition would be more than willing to do so. Thanks for calling in, Jim. We're going to jump into headlines of the week. It is Friday, and for the first Friday in a couple weeks now, Aaron, I feel like we have not been doing a good job getting to our best headlines of the week. We've had to pull them up on Monday instead, but this Friday, we are ready to go as the defending champion because, you know, I beat up on Luke pretty hard last week. I am going to defer to you and allow you to go first.
All right. So yeah, it's my first Wisconsin headline of the week that I'm presenting. This one comes from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel on July 3rd, updated on July 4th. David Bakhtiari starred at the Beer Olympics, and he brought Packers rookie Tucker Kraft with him. So David Bakhtiari is an elder statesman on the Green Bay Packers who appears ready to mentor the younger talent. That could mean on the football field in 2023, but it also could mean one of his other talents, beer chugging. And so, yeah, basically, I feel like having Green Bay Packers, an older Packer, mentor a younger one at the Beer Olympics for chugging beer is about as Wisconsin as it gets.
Yeah, no, that's a good one. That's a really good one. Andre, I got to throw you on the hot seat right now. You will be judging this. Toss those black robes on, get your legal mind well-tuned, and get ready to determine the winner after this. Though, I almost don't even want to go because I don't think I really have a shot for this one. But I'm going to do it anyways because this is something that I found that really frustrated me reading from Urban Milwaukee. Foxconn deal is still costing taxpayers. This month is the six-year anniversary of the famous announcement by then-Governor Scott Walker of a deal with the Taiwanese company Foxconn that was soon hailed as, quote, the eighth wonder of the world by then-President Donald Trump. Foxconn promised to invest $10 billion in a massive factory to manufacture high-resolution LCD screens that would employ 13,000 people. In return, it would receive a $3 billion subsidy from the state. What's I think really noteworthy in particular from this article is Foxconn hired hundreds of workers towards the end of 2019, claiming them on its report for the state for the 2019 year and quickly laying them off as early as 2020. So they were employed for basically a couple months. A former Foxconn employee called it a, quote, pump and dump operation done to qualify for state tax credits. The new contract that was negotiated by the Evers administration appears to have closed this loophole, which has meant the workers are kept on the payroll for longer. Last fall, and this is, I find this hilarious, Foxconn has modified the name of its efforts on its website, switching from Gen 10.5 to Gen 6 as their focus, and then for years saying that the empty warehouse in southeastern Wisconsin is the centerpiece of an AI 8K plus 5G strategy without ever explaining what that meant. I don't know what that means. That just sounds like you're throwing buzzwords, technological buzzwords out. That's going to convince the people of Wisconsin. Oh, hey, they're still doing good work. They're still getting anything done. When in reality, nothing has been accomplished by this Foxconn facility. In fact, Microsoft has swooped in to purchase some of the land. They also edited their website in favor of a new name, saying, calling it the quote, 3+3 model for transformation, unquote, with which a website illustration shows will combine electric vehicle, digital health, and FII robotics with 5G solutions, semiconductors, and industrial AI. This is just buzzwords. They're not doing anything. They don't mean anything. They're just saying words that they think sounds technologically competent.
It's word salad.
It's word salad. It's nothing more than word salad. So, Andre, I think Aaron made this pretty easy for you, but my backup was the roller coaster riders trapped upside down for hours in Crandon, Wisconsin. Thrill seekers got more than they bargained for in Wisconsin when the roller coaster they were riding got stuck upside down at the Forest County Festival. It shut down mid-ride Sunday, leaving some passengers hanging upside down for at least 3 hours. Yikes.
Jesus, imagine the head rush on that one.
I believe all individuals went to the hospital afterwards. But Aaron, drum roll, please. Andre, who had our best Wisconsin headline of the week?
Gonna have to go with Aaron. There's nothing more Wisconsin than chugging beers, especially David Bakhtiari, who kind of famously did that during the Milwaukee Bucks championships run when he was chugging all those beers. So got to give it to Aaron. But Foxconn is a very, very notable mention considering how much it has completely destroyed corporate subsidies and how you should be careful of that.
Just like you said, it made you angry. Yeah, that's infuriating.
It is absolutely infuriating, and I wish I could have had a more positive Wisconsin headline of the week. I'm a little disappointed in myself for not finding the Bakhtiari story first, because that is prime, Aaron. I'm not even going to fight for this one. I understand completely I lost this. We are not doing a stop the steal.
There's no shame. There's no shame, Will.
No shame in losing this one. So, Andre, I wanted to thank you for coming on the show today. Give us a quick shout-out. Where can we find you?
You can find me at Our Wisconsin Revolution. Just go to ourwisconsinrev.com. You can also find me on Twitter, AndreWalton56. Or you can just connect with me through our Wisconsin Revolution Twitter page, which is just Our Wisconsin Rev, or Our Wisconsin Rev on Facebook, or Our Wisconsin Rev on Instagram. I am.
Thanks for joining us today, Andre. It is wonderful to have you. We'll be back Monday, party people. You have an awesome weekend. This is Town Call. Peace.